This paid program may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Welcome to the Business of Government Hour, a conversation about management with a government executive who is changing the way government does business. The Business of Government Hour is produced by the IBM Center for the Business of Government, which was created in 1998 to encourage discussion and research into new approaches to improving government effectiveness. You can find out more about the center by visiting us on the web at businessofgovernment.org. And now, the Business of Government Hour.
Welcome to the Business of Government Hour. I'm Michael Keegan, your host and managing editor of the Business of Government magazine. Given government influences many facets of our lives, it is critical that we monitor how it performs and operates and use that information to shape and transform how it works. By adopting proven performance management practices, such as ambitious goals set by leaders combined with frequent data-driven reviews, the administration expects federal agencies to continually improve their ability to meet mission and serve citizens. How has the federal performance management framework evolved over the last two decades? How has the federal government sought to create a culture of performance improvement? We'll explore these questions and so much more with our very special guest, Shelley Metzenbaum, former Associate Director for Performance and Personnel Management at the Office of Management and Budget. Shelley, welcome to the show. It's great to have you.
Thank you, Michael. It's terrific to be here.
So, Shelley, before we get into specific initiatives you pursued when you were with OMB, what is the mission of the Office of Management and Budget? And could you tell us a little bit about how it's organized?
Sure. Well, OMB, the Office of Management and Budget, serves the president, and its mission is very simply to work with agencies to help them meet the president's policy, budget, management, and regulatory objectives. OMB also plays this critical role supporting cross-agency action, learning, and co-investment in a number of cases. So you asked a little bit about the organization of OMB. So the OMB has a lot of different component parts, and I think it's best to think of it in terms of its objectives because those component parts tend to work with one another, although from the outside people may not see it that well. But there are some offices such as my office and the eGov office, the financial officer's office, the acquisition office, and then there are other offices such as the legislative reference division that looks at sort of legislation and makes sure you get government-wide comment on it, the Office of Information and Regulatory Affairs, which deals with regulation that everyone knows about on specific regulations, but also on statistics across government. And then there are the resource management offices that people most commonly think of as the budget offices. But we all really work together. So my office, in each resource management office, there are performance leads and personnel leads with whom we work. And we have complementary roles that we work on with the agencies. So whereas we may have expertise in how do you set an effective goal and how do you measure, what are good measurements, how do you use the data, we have policy setting in terms of what do we expect agencies to do in that generally. They work specifically on specific policies as well as trying to make sure that about the affordability of those policies and dealing with the trade-offs when you have to make trade-offs in terms of how much you can afford.
I'd like to transition to your specific role while you were at OMB. What were some of your duties and responsibilities as the Associate Director for Performance and Personnel Management?
So as the Associate Director, I came in, my responsibilities working with the Chief Performance Officer, Deputy Director for Management, also with the Director of the Budget, of the whole Office of Management and Budget, to really determine what our policy was in terms of performance improvement, performance management, how we were going to use goals, measurement, how we were going to use them, and to set that policy and then to communicate it and then to make sure that agencies were executing on it. We also took on a big role working with the Performance Improvement Council to support that effort. And that was a big part of what our office did. So really thinking about changing the mindset, if you will, like sometimes like say resetting the mindset. People talk about culture change. where this was about improving performance. It wasn't about checking a box that you adopted a certain practice or that you had gotten a certain score. We were really trying to do it so that agencies were very clear about what it was they were trying to accomplish, how they were trying to accomplish that. They were looking at the best evidence out there, making sure they were disciplined in their delivery, working with their delivery partners, but also with their to think about the strategies, so to look at the evidence, and then constantly ask, and not only once a year, but a more frequent basis, where they were looking at priorities. How are we doing? What can we do to work smarter?
Yeah, so this was no compliance exercise.
This was no compliance. This was bringing it alive. This was bringing goals and measurement, taking them from being words on a page or bits on a, you know, website, but to really being tools, power tools, I like to think of them, that we had looked at the evidence and seen this happen in other governments, federal, state, local, you know, other countries, and really seen how powerful this is, and also the best practices in the private sector.
So as you look over your tenure at OMB, and it was 4 years, correct?
It was four, yeah, a little under 4 years.
A little under. What were some of your biggest challenges that you faced, and how did you address those challenges?
So that's an interesting question. I would say we had a number of challenges, but the two that I think were perhaps the most surprising to me. One is, when I think about goals and goal setting, I think about it as a communication exercise, a vision exercise, a way, a shorthand way of saying to people within the organization, beyond the organization, delivery partners, watchdogs, customers, clientele, whatever. What is it we're focusing on? What are we trying to accomplish? And using the ambitiousness of the goals as a way of communicating where the priorities were, et cetera. It apparently had not been that way, that the way agencies had used goals and measures was to try and set goals and measure for everything all the time, instead of treating it as a priority-setting exercise, but more than an exercise, a way of implementing, a way of communicating, and then a way of making things happen. So one of my surprises was how little priority setting there had been. The second surprise was how the work on evidence, and when I say evidence, finding things that work, and people, there's a whole world of evaluation, and the world of performance had bifurcated. I had assumed they were one big whole, and in fact, they were operating along different tracks, and they weren't talking to each other. I think we've made a lot of progress over that in the last few years, and we have a lot more progress to be made. But it's exciting where people are realizing that sometimes, and a lot of the times, you need performance measurement on a regular basis, and then you can use that performance measurement as the outcome indicators, or for those who learned any statistics, the dependent variable that you can then do independent to find what the important independent variables are, regression analyses or whatever. But also you can integrate experiments with control groups into agency actions, and trying to get that now as a way of doing business. And I was surprised, quite frankly, at how far apart they had become, that people just weren't bringing them home. They weren't operationalizing this.
So what are the characteristics, given your time both in academia and in government, what makes an effective leader?
Well, it's a great question, and I think there's lots of different characteristics of effective leaders and lots of different kinds of effective leaders. But I do think it's very important to keep your eye on the prize and to communicate that. In other words, be very clear about what it is you're trying to accomplish and not try and do everything all the time, but rather be clear about what the priorities are. So I think keeping your eye on the prize, but then once you've set a goal, not just giving up on it, talking about it, asking about it. I think that's incredibly important. I think you want to create an environment that invites innovation. And innovation means there's risk-taking. And risk-taking means that things won't always work. We have to, you know, have leaders who believe, and I think really great leaders think, if at first you don't succeed, try again. I mean, it's a great, you know, saying. We ought to say it more and more, because if we're not having any areas where we have to try again, then that means we're not trying very much that's very innovative. So creating an environment where it's expected that you're going to have multiple failures before you have great success, and that you really want that innovation. Creating an environment where you can ask questions two ways, three ways, five ways, and it's not a gotcha environment where there are serious after-action reviews, where it's not seen as, oh my goodness, you know, you did something horrible, but rather something horrible happened. Why did that happen? What can we learn from that? And making sure that you apply that. So creating an environment where you really get that kind of openness in exploring what works and what doesn't. And then finally, really thinks about the delivery partners and who outside the organization is going to care, and make sure to communicate both to the key opinion leaders so that they understand and share and appreciate what the agency is doing, but also to delivery partners who are so critical for so much of our domestic policy, but it also our international work. We don't do it on our own. We always do it with delivery partners. And leaders, I think, appreciate that and start to think and help their organizations think strategically about that.
How has the federal government sought to create a culture of performance improvement? We will ask Shelley Metzenbaum, former Associate Director for Performance and Personnel Management at OMB, when our conversation continues on the Business of Government Hour. Is there a recipe for successful cross-agency collaborations that are enduring? Or is each initiative so dependent on context and personality that there's no way to offer general principles of success? Well, an IBM Center report by Dr. Jane Fountain, Implementing Cross-Agency Collaborations, a Guide for Federal Managers, offers advice on successful cross-agency relationships. Fountain says there is, in fact, a recipe for success, but it depends on the number of factors. Go to businessofgovernment.org, download Jane Fountain's report, and find out. That's businessofgovernment.org. Welcome back to the Business of Government Hour. I'm Michael Keegan, your host, and our guest today is Shelley Metzenbaum, former Associate Director for Performance and Personnel Management at OMB. So, Shelley, given your experience, what is a culture of performance improvement? And during your tenure at OMB, how did you seek to foster government-wide culture of performance improvement?
So I think a culture of performance improvement keeps your eye on the outcomes, the impacts, the things you want to improve on the ground. It connects the people in government organizations to the people on the ground whose lives they're trying to make better. And so I think part of the challenge here is to make sure we keep that line of sight, mm-hmm. and that the emphasis is on continuous improvement, with breakthrough improvement in some places and with incremental improvement in others. And sometimes that may depend on the relative priority, the relative difficulty, the availability of budget. And so a culture of performance improvement gets people focused on those trends. Mm-hmm. If there are milestones, if it's something like Mars landing, you know, or some of the other work that our science organizations do, it's what are the milestones you want to get accomplished? And then thinking about the longer term impacts. But the culture of performance improvement is not about, did I get a good grade and can I get a better grade? Mm-hmm. You know, it is about, are the trends going in the right direction? And which trends do I need to keep an eye on? It's also looking at the potential risks. And if there are trends that I want to keep an eye on that aren't the key performance trend, but perhaps unwanted side effects that I want to keep my eye on as well. So a culture of performance improvement is looking at what is it I'm trying to influence and making sure you do it. It's not a gotcha environment. And so what we were really trying to do was make sure people were focused not on getting a better grade or getting to green. Getting to green, managing to red, yellow, greens can be very important if you're the manager of an organization and you know intimately what each one of those means. And so sometimes it's very, very valuable. It's a great shorthand. But if all you're doing is counting a bunch of dots that, you know, you want to get to green and you don't really know what they are, that doesn't have as much value. So we need to do the combination, you know, and figure out what the right things are. And what we were trying to do and what I think we're beginning to do, I won't say we've got a wholesale change. We've got a lot of change across the government to happen yet. But it's really focusing on improvement and the impact on the ground, connecting the people in the federal government to the people on the ground whose lives they're trying to make better.
So, Shelley, the Obama administration has sought to have agencies set priorities and find effective ways of managing programs. To fulfill those expectations, the administration has emphasized a handful of practices. Would you elaborate on those practices and how following them would contribute to good management of programs?
Sure. And let me say these six practices came from our taking a good, hard look at past practice all over the world, past practice at all levels of government, as well as in the private sector and the research in laboratories. Mm-hmm. So let me break them down a little bit and start with a simple version of them and then elaborate. First is goal setting. Second is measurement. Third is analysis. Fourth, evidence, use of evidence. The fifth is doing data-driven reviews. And finally, it's communicating the information, the performance information, to key audiences, thinking about which ones they are. So let me start with the goal setting. We started by asking the heads of the cabinet agencies and eight other large agencies to set a few priority goals that were specific and ambitious. Mm-hmm. And why do we do that? Well, because we know from looking at the literature that where resources are sufficient and skill sets are far enough along, specific, ambitious goals stimulate innovation, they encourage focus, they energize people. And, you know, I often talk about Kennedy's man on the moon in the decade and return him back home. The president has set a number of goals where improve energy efficiency by the end of 2035, double exports by the end of 2014. You get specific, ambitious goals like that. And people have to come together and say, how are we going to accomplish this? It makes people think. It gets people thinking. And if you then have measurement, the frequent measurement, and not just once a year, but on priority goals, we said four times a year, because this wasn't a reporting exercise. This was an action exercise. So we really wanted the quarterly reporting to get people to look at the data. They could do it more often than quarterly. Some do it monthly. Mm-hmm. But to look at the data, think about it, and say, what is it telling me? Using the data for feedback to help illuminate the path forward. And we actually talked about different kinds of data. So measurement wasn't just the performance indicator. So, for example, the energy efficiency indicator, but it was also other indicators that might be relevant. So where you are doing, the Department of Energy had a goal together with Housing and Urban Development about 1.2 million homes getting retrofitted by the end of 2013. I may have this wrong, but you could look at performance.gov and find out what it is. They hit the goal a year early, but the other thing that's cool, that's great, is they also talk about what the impact is on greenhouse gases. And so there's, in that case, outcome indicators that they were managing outputs in that situation, but they knew that it had important derivative effects on the quality of the air, et cetera. There are other times where you're looking for unwanted side effects. So I always talk about Bill Bratton, who was the New York City police commissioner, who basically also realized he wanted to count police abuse so that he wasn't, when people were trying to bring the crime rate down, the abuse rate wasn't going up. So it's learning from that. So that's goals, that's measurement, the analysis. Okay, you gather the data. What do you do with it? Well, you need to look for patterns. So you want to see different subsets that have different patterns of performance. For example, if you've got different regional offices, are some doing better than others? If so, what are they doing? So it's slicing and dicing the data you're collecting and remembering to, when you collect it, to categorize it in ways that are going to be useful, whether it is by location, if by time. Time stamping certain things for the time of day, day of week, week of year can be really informative. We wanted folks to analyze their data to look for the positive outliers, those things that might be doing a better job, not necessarily, but might be, to trigger focused follow-up questions. Look at the negative outliers. What's going on? Drill down, root cause analysis. Doesn't mean they've got a problem. But that kind of analysis, the analysis that normalizes for background. The third thing I've talked about is evidence. Sometimes it's not the performance data itself, but you actually want to have experiments. So we have some agencies that are, for example, on enforcement actions, they're testing out different kinds of letters to see if they get different responses. We've seen NHTSA, National Highway Traffic Safety Administration, take their very successful Click It or Ticket campaign, which combined a stop and check and an enforcement action with a campaign and worked with the locals trying something similar with what they call cell phone in one hand, ticket in the other to try and reduce distracted driving. Finally, data-driven reviews. The data-driven reviews are a signal from the heads of the organization, the deputy secretaries, chief operating officers on these priority goals. Ask questions at least every quarter. And we're hearing from agencies that's making a huge difference. But we're also seeing it start to trickle down to more and more bureaus, components, offices. FEMA does its FEMA stat, really trying to learn, and it's building that and how smart it is, you know, how it approaches this, more outcome focused. We're hoping that will start to trickle down everywhere. And then audience-focused communication. What does Congress need to know? What do delivery partners need to know? What does do people in the agency need to know? Trying to think about that. So if you're looking at education statistics, what does the teacher need? What does the principal, the superintendent need? The principal need? Really thinking about the data, mm-hmm. and who needs it to make what kinds of decisions so that you can actually improve outcomes and the return on investment.
You alluded to this in your last response, but I'd like to drill down a little bit more on the priority goals.
Yes.
Since their inception, or since you required the agencies to create them, how has pursuing this approach enhanced agency performance?
You know, I know we used the priority goals to kickstart this entire understanding of the power of a goal, mm-hmm. the power of more frequent measurement. And it seems to be working. We have really seen agencies grab hold of this and do some very exciting innovation. You know, at HUD, they run the HUD stat meetings, and the Secretary Donovan really drills down. They've done some very interesting innovation where they'll bring SES from other parts of the organization to sit at the table and ask questions so that you get more folks engaged who have a different perspective and different experience. And starting to see how, for example, with the Department of the Interior, where you start at the top with the deputy secretary asking questions, for example, about violent crime in tribal communities. But in fact, it's the tribal community just as much that wants to ask those questions and use that data, and you engage them. So it may start in the center with the priority goals, but we have seen it happen in bureaus. The Department of the Treasury has its components. Each have their own sort of set of goals that they've reached agreement on that they're managing to. It was a way of getting people to understand the power of both priority setting of a goal that's specific, that's, you know, how much of what by when, and leadership engagement, though that leadership can and should start at the top, but it can also be in a local office. It can be in a region, a community that's looking even across multiple goals.
I'd like to transition a little bit to the cross-agency priority goals. I know there are 14, correct?
There are.
Okay. But would you tell us more about those goals and how are they being managed across agencies?
So there are 14 cross-agency priority goals that we set with the fiscal year 13 budget. So they are all on performance.gov. Every one of them has a goal leader. For the most part, those goal leaders are people who are in White House policy offices and leaders within the White House. They fall into sort of three categories, I like to think of them. Some of them are mission-focused. So 98% broadband, energy efficiency, doubling exports, entrepreneurship and small business, science, technology, engineering, math education, veterans and military families, and job training. So those are all very mission-focused. We have two that are mission-focused and federal agency behavior, federal agency action, sustainability and cybersecurity. And then we have the rest are sort of cross-government, government-wide management objectives like real estate, like improper payments, mm-hmm. like reducing, closing the critical skills gaps. And in each of those cases, we've identified a goal leader. And then we work with the goal leader. The Performance Improvement Council works very closely with the goal leaders to support them if they need it. So in the case of the exports, doubling exports by the end of 2014, you have a goal leader and you have an export cabinet. And, you know, to the extent they need PIC help from the Performance Improvement Council, we support them. To the extent they don't, we don't need to. But, you know, it varies over time. We actually help them work with the agencies to figure out who needs to do what by when to deliver on this goal. And they, too, have to do quarterly reviews. They have to report quarterly to the public. It's all posted on performance.gov. And we look at it and try and assess if there's any that are in trouble, where we can be helpful, where we see opportunities for gain. And, you know, we'll raise that if we see those as missed opportunities. But basically, we try and support these goal leaders and the goal teams they assemble to deliver on these goals.
So this is an ambitious sort of approach, cross-agency priority goals. What are some of the challenges you faced?
It's incredibly ambitious. Yeah. If this were easy, it might have been done already.
Yes.
What we realize is there's a lot of challenges the federal government is asked to take on that require cooperation across multiple agencies. And it's not easy to do, and yet it needs to be done. So we're experimenting, our trial and erroring our way through this effort. And we're doing, pushing it through. One of the biggest challenges is, how do you assemble teams to work on this when they have other jobs Yes. that they're also working on? So you really hope the power of a goal, and we're seeing the power of a goal in the quarterly reviews. And when I say reviews, on a quarterly basis, having to step back and say, where are we? What should we do next? And so we're using what I'll call the cadence of goal management to try and bring about more progress here. We have a lot to learn. We've had some great successes. It's fun to watch the cybersecurity goal leader who decided he was going to grab this and run with it and, use those quarterlies to really move things forward. You know, the STEM is an area where, and job training, where we have information, there's proposals in the president's budget and sort of trying to wrestle with what could be done with existing authority and what might be better served with other authority, so putting the proposals together on that. So each goal, and there aren't too many, and we don't want to have too many because they really are a big lift. That's why we chose them. Each one has its own challenges, and we're trying to take them on, or my old office is trying to take them on in that way.
Shelley, from strengthening the economy with faster patent processing to eliminating veterans' homelessness, there are examples of performance management in action that has translated to tangible improvements in program management and delivery. Would you elaborate on any of those program successes you documented during your tenure at OMB? And how does each of these cases best illustrate a culture of performance improvement?
First of all, I'll say if there's a synopsis of some of the successes in the analytic perspectives of the budget, Chapter 7, if anyone loves to read analytic perspectives, I urge you to go do that. But more than that, check out performance.gov and look under the clear goals section. Every one of the 117 priority goals is listed. And for every one, you have a progress update. You have why the goal was chosen, what the strategies are, the progress update, next plan, next steps, which is this quarter and next, future actions. And then you have the indicators. So it's a whole vast and varied area, line of successes. So traffic fatalities, National Highway Traffic Safety Administration, continues to go down. Traffic fatalities go down, the number as well as the rate, despite the fact that vehicle miles traveled is going up. At the same time, they know where it is going up, and they're on things like distracted driving. They're starting to realize that could be a risk in the future. We need to get ahead of the problem and on top of it sooner rather than later. The Health and Human Services, working on adult smoking, trying to bring that down, having some real success, but also hospital-acquired infections, mm-hmm. bringing down the rate of hospital-acquired infections, which saves people, saves lives, has a real effect on people's well-being, but saves money as well. Some Interior Department, where they had decided they were going to use one of their great assets, which is all the land that the Interior Department has, and take on the president's challenge to everyone to increase renewable energy. And so they set a goal that they were going to try and authorize by FY11, end of FY11, it was 9,000 megawatts of renewable energy. Now, in the prior 20 years or 25 years, they'd only done 1,500 megawatts of renewable energy. Their goal, talk about ambitious, was 9,000 megawatts by the end of fiscal year 11, and they didn't make it. They only got to 6,000 megawatts. 6,000 megawatts is enough to power a million homes, okay? And they'd, again, only done 1,500 in the 20 years before that. So they said, okay, didn't make 6,000. Did we penalize them at OMB? No, we celebrated them. That was a great, ambitious goal. The trend lines were amazing. And then they said, we're going to try and go for 11,000 megawatts by the end of fiscal year 13. And lo and behold, they hit it. They're at 11,000 megawatts already, you know, and it's because they, and if you look at the curve, if you look, go into performance.gov and you look at the curve, you will realize it was flat for almost the first year. They had to figure out how to do this. They did trial and error. How do we get this kind of permitting done without compromising the environmental quality that we want to protect? That's so important to our mission. And they figured it out. And it's become a model. And you can go on to performance.gov and click on learn more on the goal overview and see the actual status of the different permits. Mm-hmm. So that's very exciting. And similarly exciting is the work they've done on water conservation, where they've put out grants and they will eventually start tracking with the water impact of those grants, the climate change work. Both of those are much bigger learning curves. The work with the Indian tribal community, where they wanted to reduce violent crime. And, you know, there they didn't bite off more than they can chew. They did what, you know, a bite-sized piece, four violent reservations for tribal communities with high violent crime rates. And in the first 2 years, they brought the crime rate down. The goal was 5%. They brought it down 35% on average on four of the reservations. But one of them did not come down. The other three came down a lot. The fourth didn't come down until year three. And they're now at 55%, but they took on two new high crime reservations, and they're taking on lots of challenges. They're not, they haven't figured out how to do it. And we think that is, we hope they figure it out. And what we love with the goal is they're continuing to stick with it. I can go on Corps of Engineers, you know, keeping the locks open so that we have more time. You don't lose commercial time and, you know, and money and, you know, good economic development for the country. There's goals after goals after goals that there's huge progress here. And we essentially feel that we tried something based on the evidence, and our experience with the first 117 goals is showing this actually can work at the federal level. And now our challenge is to roll it out to other areas.
How has the federal performance management framework evolved over the last two decades? We will ask Shelley Metzenbaum, former Associate Director for Performance and Personnel Management at OMB, when our conversation continues on the Business of Government Hour. Pundits warn about the fiscal cliff, but federal agencies nearly every year hold up the budgetary sky while walking on the edge of a cliff. It's called the world of continuing resolutions and potential government shutdowns. The IBM Center report, The Cost of Budgetary Uncertainty, Analyzing the Impact of Late Appropriations by Dr. Phil Joyce, examines the impact of late budgets on the efficiency and effectiveness of government operations. To find out more about the cost of budgetary uncertainty, go to businessofgovernment.org. That's businessofgovernment.org. Welcome back to the Business of Government Hour. I'm Michael Keegan, your host, and our guest today is Shelley Metzenbaum, former Associate Director for Performance and Personnel Management at OMB. Shelley, would you tell us more about the GPRA Modernization Act of 2010 and how it builds on the foundation of the original Government Performance and Results Act?
So the original law, the 1993 law, which asked agencies to start setting goals and measuring performance in 1997, had a few pilots, the Coast Guard being a noteworthy one, and there's fabulous lessons learned from the Coast Guard. They did an amazing job back then and still do, I believe. But one of the big changes between the original law and the current law, probably the biggest change, is the emphasis on use. So the first law, the 93 law, didn't say it wasn't about use. But it didn't say it was about use. And, you know, one of the things I often say is useful, useful, useful. If the goals and measures aren't useful, mm-hmm. why bother doing it? It's probably wasteful. So it's really trying to get agencies, sub-agencies, individual, you know, the regional office, an individual in the regional office. We actually have an individual in the regional office who pokes me every so often and lets me know how they're using one of the goals to drive change working in their community. So it's really trying to get people to understand the power of a goal complemented by measurement and the analysis and the data-driven discussions to sort of make change on the ground, bring people in. So the goals and the measurement are useful both for communicating those priorities, for finding what works and what doesn't, so you can do more of what works and fix or stop doing what doesn't, but also for enlisting and engaging the intelligence, the innovation, the ideas, the experience, and the assistance, both of people in government and people outside government. And so I think GIPR modernization really was about that use. So it was really the value proposition of using the information, of using performance information. And then on top of that, it was very much about being much more clear about accountability expectations, the roles and responsibilities of different parties. So it creates both the chief operating officer, who's supposed to do the quarterly performance reviews on the priority goals. So again, setting priorities, and I guess it added the setting priorities as well, but chief operating officers running at least once a quarter running reviews. And now we know that's happening in all the agencies. It was our understanding that it would happen in about two of the agencies before this, the departments, I should say. It is goal leaders, where we designate goal leaders for the priority goals. Who is the person responsible for driving change? Who is the person authorized to drive that change? But then also accountability expectations. And this isn't laid out explicitly in GIPR modernization, but it's the way we're trying to implement because we think it's the spirit of GIPR modernization, which is we want stretch targets, the ambitious targets, which means, and we've said this in the guidance that OMB has put out, which is that if we see an agency, a department that's making all of its goals all the time, we will follow up with them because we will believe that they're not sufficiently ambitious. And you really want stretch targets that get you, that stimulate that innovation. So GIPR modernization was really about use. It was about this ownership. It was about getting the accountability expectations right and bringing alive something that had become a planning and reporting requirement, which I don't think was its intent, but sort of bringing it alive so it drives action on a regular basis, both the long-term strategic decision-making and actions that need to follow that, and the shorter-term, how do we iterate, how do we get fast feedback so we can adjust our actions quickly and make sure people are trying to work that way.
Mm-hmm. It's really led to a new performance management framework for the federal government. OMB articulated four goals as well as three strategies to achieve these goals. Could you elaborate on the four goals and perhaps tell us a little bit about those strategies?
Sure. So this is part of walking the talk. If we're going to ask all the agencies to lay out their objectives, we should probably do the same for ours. So the four objectives that we've set forward for our performance management framework, our performance improvement framework, one, improve outcomes. Impact on people's lives is really trying to make that change on the ground. Second, return on investment is once you found an effective practice, whether it is you're trying to help students in the lowest performing schools thrive, graduate, et cetera, once you found effective practices, can you find ways of getting a higher return on investment? So either get the same, even better practices for the same amount of money or reduce the cost of what you're trying to deliver on. So with housing and urban development, taking affordable housing and saying, how can we, with our existing budget, get more families into affordable housing, which then got them to look at things like the occupancy rate. Can we get the occupancy rate up? A third area is the quality of interactions with the federal government. So, you know, we do a lot of transactions, the Social Security Administration, Pension Benefit Guarantee Corporation, they do a lot of transactions with the general public, our passport work, things like that. Making sure we improve the quality and have high quality interactions. We also do a lot of internal work. So the Office of Personnel Management or GSA with customers within the federal government. How do we improve the quality of those interactions? And then finally, what I call democratic accountability. Mm-hmm. But it's really making sure helping the public understand better what government, why government exists, what it's trying to accomplish, the strategies it's using and how well it's doing that. So those are the four objectives we've laid out. And then we laid out three strategies, and I'm the only person who sort of promotes on the reading list analytic perspectives, but if you look at our analytic perspectives for over the last few years, we laid out these strategies in the first one that I had come into the position that I held, which was use performance goals and information to improve outcomes and accountability, communicate it, to support learning, to help the public understand. So use, communicate, and network. That very few folks do much of this on their own. Very few agencies, very few individuals, very few leaders. You need to network. You need to think about who your delivery allies are and using the goals and measures as a way of enlisting and engaging them. So it was use, communicate, and network.
So you, throughout our conversation, have mentioned the importance of evidence. And I'd like to turn to that and understand better the program evaluation tools that many federal agencies are using. Could you elaborate on some of those? And how does engaging in sort of a program evaluation approach create a culture of continuous improvement?
So, sure. First of all, as I said earlier, one of the things that most surprised me was the divide between performance goal setting and measurement and the evidence work. There shouldn't have been a divide. We need to think about this as one big whole. And in fact, if you look at another chapter eight, this year's Analytic Perspectives and possibly last year's, but we tried to take on how these two, the performance goals, measurement, evidence, all relate to each other. We also talk about it in chapter three of the budget itself, the delivering 21st century government. And I think I want to get you to think about evidence and ask folks listening to think about evidence in two categories. One is the evidence you need to figure out what your priority problems ought to be. So counting and characterizing the world in which the mission of your organization is focused so that you understand where you ought to be focusing your efforts. So in the case of Interior, looking at the high violent crime reservations. In the case of National Highway Traffic Safety Administration, basically saying we're going to look at certain kinds of problems like distracted driving. How do they do that? They have tons of data that they have tagged in different ways that lets them slice and dice the data to say, where should we be focusing? And I think the first part of evidence is actually starting to understand your opportunities and your problems that you're looking at and the characteristics of them. So you can say, where should we focus? Data will not always answer that question. Sometimes you need some value-based judgments about that. Sometimes you need some intuition. But the data can really help you understand the scope of a problem or the scope of an opportunity so that it informs your priority setting, it informs the goal setting. So that's one kind of evidence, and there's a lot of data out there, and there's a lot of administrative data like emergency room data and things like that that we don't necessarily use, but we could. Or do we have the same people coming to emergency rooms over and over again, using up a lot of the costs? If so, is there something we can do by focusing on them that we would actually be able to prevent some of this from happening? So it's thinking about that data on the front end to say, where do we focus? Where's our opportunities for action? Then there's the question about the treatments. What are the effective treatments? So we know a lot about this from the world of medicine and drugs, where they do controlled studies and randomized controlled studies to compare a drug action to a non-drug action or another drug or whatever. And you randomly assign by saying we're going to have the same number. You know, we're going to just take a pot of folks who are going to get the drugs, but some are going to get the real drug, some are going to get a placebo. We want to do the same in how we deliver government programs, okay? So if I'm trying to clean the water, it's not easy to randomly assign, but I can actually learn a little bit more by different kinds of practices. Energy conservation is an area where you can do a lot of good research to see what gets people to change their behavior to conserve energy. As I said earlier, there's some work going on in terms of enforcement letters, what makes people change behavior. There's huge amounts of potential here in terms of how do you find effective treatments, both by looking at past experience and evaluating retrospectively where you see the variations and trying to control for other background variables that could make a difference, and in terms of integrating experiments into agency action. So I'll give you one area where there may be some opportunity that I think and hope the agencies are exploring, which is getting electronic filing, increasing electronic filing, which can you want to improve the customer experience and save the government money. Well, let's experiment with different kinds of practices to see if we can get the target populations who are not the ones doing the electronic filing in doing more electronic filing and actually as a result of it feeling like they had a better quality interaction with the government. So it's integrating evidence into agency operations. And so we're trying to do that much more. At the Department of Labor, you have some really exciting work going on where the person who's the head of the evaluation shop is working with the performance management folks and the deputy secretary, now the acting secretary, and they're really working with the program offices to figure out what are the right questions to ask, you know, how do we move this forward? And there's some very exciting work at education with tiered evidence. How do you work with grantees on this to get the data you need to find what's working so you can do more of it and fix what's not? So it's integrating all of this. That gets to be very exciting, and we're hoping across the federal government folks will do that.
Yeah, I'd like to talk about that integration. Now that you're sort of stepped away, and you've mentioned earlier one of the challenges or one of the surprises was the separation of performance management from program evaluation. How would you address bridging these two complementary efforts?
So I think the bridging has begun. There's people outside the federal government who are trying to do that. There are people within the federal government who are trying to do that. I know my office has worked very closely with the evidence parts of the of OMB to work as a whole rather than separate parts, to work with other parts of you know, the Office of Science and Technology Policy to try and work as one and then support the agencies. So there, you know, is there are, I don't know if it's a brown bag or what, but a brown bag I think is coming up to try and help people understand how you bring this together. Agencies are embarking right now on what the strategic planning, where they need to set strategic goals and objectives. And then again, the GPRA modernization law requires an annual review on those strategic objectives. It requires an annual review on the goals. OMB needs to review that, but agencies ought to get started at that. OMB is asking agencies to really think hard about the strategic objectives so that it stays outcome focused, and thinking about the annual reviews and in thinking about that in their strategic planning and their annual plans, their targets, what evaluations do they need? Do they have the evidence? If so, are they going to try and roll it out? If they don't have it, how are they going to get it? So there's a concept called tiered evidence that we put into the budget, but it's really trying to get that as a just a way of doing business. At the same time, I think it's bringing the academic community, who's both doing some of the research as well as training a lot of the students who will either work in government or do the research, and the advocacy community, there are now an increasing number of advocates out there pushing for evidence, bringing us all together so that it's practical. It doesn't have to be perfect. It has to be better. And it has to be appropriately rigorous. It doesn't have to be always a perfect randomized controlled trial. And I think there's an increasing appreciation of there, it's appropriate to do a randomized controlled trial in some cases, and in other cases, there are other methodologies that may be very useful, difference in differences, and I don't consider myself a methodologist or whatever the word is, but I think it's building understanding of that and then building capacity and application of it, and I think we're at a very exciting time right now. I think that's beginning to happen, and the trajectory is on, you know, on the right curve.
What does the future hold for federal performance management? We will ask Shelley Metzenbaum, former Associate Director for Performance and Personnel Management at OMB, when our conversation continues on the Business of Government Hour. How do leaders direct ambitious change and achieve significant goals? What strategies do they use to overcome opposition and win allies? And how do specific organizational and political contexts affect strategies and outcomes? These are important age-old questions. To help answer them, the IBM Center has released Forging Governmental Change by Professor Harry Lambright. Lambright has identified two premier government leaders, Dr. Robert Gates of DOD and Dr. Francis Collins of NIH, who have led transformations within their own organizations. By all accounts, both men have been effective leaders of change. This report continues the IBM Center's long interest in leadership and transformation. So go to businessofgovernment.org and download Forging Governmental Change, Lessons from Transformations Led by Robert Gates and Francis Collins. That's businessofgovernment.org. There you can download all Center reports and find out how the business of government is not business as usual. Welcome back to the Business of Government Hour. I'm Michael Keegan, your host, and our guest today is Shelley Metzenbaum, former Associate Director for Performance and Personnel Management at OMB. Shelley, this year marks the 20th anniversary of the original GPRA Act of 1993. As you reflect on the federal performance community's progress over the last 20 years, what accomplishments are you most proud of? And perhaps you could highlight some of those accomplishments for us.
So as I look back over the last 20 years, which I can do, I'm proud of a number of things that I think a large group of people, a bipartisan group of people, have accomplished working together. And it's working together to make government work better, but also realizing that government can make a huge difference and trying to use what are common sense tools that if you weren't in government, you would say you mean you weren't already doing that, trying to make the use of these common sense tools a real resource for the incredibly committed people in the federal workforce who come into government, in the state and local workforce, the tribal communities, having, you know, giving them the power of clear goals. What is it we're trying to accomplish? Better measurement. I really think the goals have gotten better. They've gotten more coherent. They're easier to find. The measurement's gotten more sensible, easier to find. We're learning, becoming more sophisticated about measurement. For example, a number of agencies are trying to manage things that try to hide, like drug running, right? How do you do that? And starting to build an understanding that it's not one size fits all, but rather that there's different approaches we need to take to different situations. We worked a lot on performance and other indicators, on milestones for some kinds of goals. So I think our sophistication, because we're all committed to making government work better and believing government can make a difference, and trusting in the intelligence of the folks who work in the government, but trying to give them the tools, the clear goals, the measurement that really matters, and helping them understand the analysis. I've been very excited over the last few years to see some of the outside groups, you know, start to offer, you know, just case studies on analytics and how to use them. IBM has actually done some reports on this. So I think there's been a lot of learning, and it's not just over the last 4 years, it's over the last 20 years. I think about Mort Downey, who was the Deputy Secretary of Transportation under Clinton, who started the quarterly goals with each of his bureaus. Clear goal setting. So the Federal Aviation Administration, Jane Garvey was part of that. You know, she was head of the FAA at the time. So it's not something we figured out new. They started that way back when. As I said, the Coast Guard did some amazing work trying to bring down the number of fatalities associated with vessels, and they were remarkably successful years ago. It's taking that and building a learning system where we've learned from that. Even going back before GIPRA with William Haddon and his National Highway Traffic Safety Administration, is called the Haddon Matrix, which is this amazing tool that looks before, during, and after every fatal accident, what the environmental conditions were, what the operator characteristics were, the equipment characteristics, and then what political jurisdiction it's in, so you know what the laws were. By tagging that, he created that database that allows us now to know where we ought to focus on fatalities, what NHTSA's priorities ought to be. Again, learning curve. So I'm very proud that we've built a learning system and that we're continuing to build that, that the Performance Improvement Council is really, you know, getting its feet on the ground and getting a running start to build so that helping agencies understand how to run effective data-driven reviews. I think we have work to be done in terms of understanding how to communicate the data so that it actually does illuminate where you need to focus, so it actually energizes, innovates, and encourages and invites assistance and expertise.
So, Shelley, can you give us a sense of some of the key government-wide issues that will affect performance improvement officers over the next couple of years?
So I think one of the biggest challenges on this is getting the incentives aligned in the right direction so that people, in fact, so I always quote what I call the Bratton accountability principle, which is nobody got in trouble if the crime rate went up. They got in trouble if they didn't know why it had gone up and didn't have a plan to deal with it. In a world in which there, I'll argue, sometimes is a bias toward the negative, where the news media, present company accepted, will tend to want to focus on the bad angle of